Last session and final. So what we decided we would talk about tonight is kind of do a closing and then where we're going to go from here and how to best take what we've learned and apply it and perhaps discuss some of the stumbling blocks and some of the ways to deal with them. And first, we brought our keynote speaker here today, Brajasundari, and we wanted to get some inspiration in this farewell session from her. So we wanted to ask you what you experience when you chant the holy name, when you chant japa. And how do you feel when you're thinking of Krishna?
Good.
Do you have any advice for the devotees here? How to, anything about japa you want to tell them? You want to tell them later? Okay. So she'll get inspired more as the session goes. So I was thinking, you know how they have all these books on success? You know, they study successful people. You want to come up here? Do they have, there's so many books on success, and invariably, these books on success are written by studying people who are successful, and they interview them, and they start to find similarities in how they think and how they behave, and then they come up with principles. If you do this, you'll be successful. So I was thinking, as a starter for a little discussion, if we were to write a book on the success principles of a good japa chanter, what would some of the principles be?
Wake up early.
Wake up early. Every good japa chanter wakes up early, yes.
And that waking up early begins the life.
Yeah, and every good japa chanter goes to bed early enough to wake up.
Except for Prabhupada.
Early enough.
Except for Prabhupada.
Except if you're transcendental.
Attentiveness.
What?
Attentiveness.
It's attentive. It's not doing other things. When he's chanting, he's chanting.
And doesn't keep company with people who are not cultivating Krishna consciousness.
Yeah. He chooses his association wisely, knowing how important that is and how that can undo his Krishna consciousness, yes?
Avoid offenses to devotees.
Avoid offenses?
To devotees,
yeah. And if we elaborate on that, we could say he's cautious not to do anything that's going to disrupt his bhakti lata creeper or thereby disrupt his japa. I think both things are there. Remember yesterday last week I was saying how the level of bhakti we're on is tied to the quality of our chanting. So I was thinking of a question we could ask. Is it possible for a pure devotee to chant bad rounds? And is it possible for someone who's very fallen to chant good rounds? Or are there limitations?
Pure devotee means he never chants bad rounds.
I think by the mercy of a pure devotee, you could chant better rounds.
Yes, even if you're fallen.
Yes.
And what Kalyapani said is true, but I want to tell one story and you can analyze if it's 100% true. And it was during the Bombay days and establishing the temple. I believe it was Tamal Krishna Maharaj said, because the situation was so disturbing. He said, "I'm so disturbed, I can hardly chant my rounds." And Prabhupada said, "Me too." Something like that. You know, I can't focus on my rounds and problems. Neither can I. But in general, it seems obvious that a pure devotee chants with pure devotion and is always thinking of Krishna, so he's always thinking of Krishna while he's chanting. So it's an important it's an important point to be aware of that what we do affects our japa, how we live, how we think. We can't, it's like sometimes I think, one day I'm not Krishna conscious, and then the next morning I think I'm going to chant good rounds. And that equation doesn't always work. It usually takes six, eight rounds to get there. Whereas if the day is Krishna conscious, the tendency is the rounds will be good or better. So our lifestyle is very much affected. It very much affects our chanting. Anything else? Yes?
To chant in a prayerful mood.
Yes.
I was asking for the guidance and certain prayers and help us.
Yeah. Chanting is prayer. And one would naturally think, if someone's serious in their chanting, that serious means they're praying. It's not haphazard. It's intentional. Did we talk about intention here at all? I don't think we did. But one of the things, I just want to mention this for a moment because you brought this up. Praying is a form of intentional chanting because you're focused on, you're aspiring for something. It's a focused type of chanting. And in the japa workshops that I've done recently, consistent feedback I get is whenever I talk about creating an intention before you chant, people always say how much that has helped them. In other words, before you sit down and chant your rounds, you become intentional. It can be an affirmation. It can be an intention for a particular effort you're going to put into, or a particular result, or a particular experience. Of course, we leave it up to Krishna. But when we were in Sharanagati, I told this, I mentioned this to the devotees. I said, when we do 64 rounds, often devotees go into that with a bit of a fear that it's going to get boring at a certain point. Or it's going to get hard, or it's going to get hackneyed. Many devotees go into that. I don't know. If you would think that way, if you have to chant, if tomorrow you were going to chant 64 rounds, let's say that we're at a retreat now, and tomorrow's a 64 round day, you might be thinking, well, I wonder how I'm going to do. I wonder if it's going to get hard at a certain point. So what I did was I made an intention the evening before for the opposite experience, that it would be very easy and it would be relishable, and then I would look forward to that day because normally I don't get to chant all day. So I took it in a positive way. Instead of going into a negative way, I took it in a positive way. So I mentioned that the affirmation, or not the affirmation, but the intention I had was that it would be relishable and it wouldn't be difficult, it would be easy, it would get better. And I tend to have that experience when I do that. And Jayadvaita Swami was there and he did the same thing. And he said he had the same experience also. He entered it in that mood and had that same experience. And that I noticed the opposite is often true, that often devotees enter it in the opposite mood. They think it's going to be difficult and they enter with that, almost expecting it. And invariably, it's difficult because they've kind of entered that consciousness. So that's with that consciousness. So that's helped a lot of devotees to have an intention, whatever it may be.
Your belief becomes your reality.
Yeah, very much. And also, I think Krishna, you know, he likes to reciprocate. So if that intention is clear, then he knows what we want. And also I find when the intention is clear, it's easier to focus. Because now you know what to focus on, as opposed to kind of, I mean, not that we don't expect miracles or different things, but still it helps focus. So we at some point we had done affirmations. I blissfully, or I I blissfully chant the names of Krishna. I feel gratitude in chanting my rounds. I relish this time I spend with Krishna. These kinds of things. Kind of like what you said. Swagatam Namprabhu, welcome. Welcome Namprabhu. It's creating a positive atmosphere. I welcome another day this opportunity. I relish this opportunity another day I have to chant the holy name. It's all, you're entering with a positive mood. And I know often when I wake up and I begin to chant my rounds, I think of all the things that I didn't finish yesterday and the day before and the day before and the day before and the year before and the year before. And when I think that way, the time is like, I wish I didn't have to chant now because then I could do those things. So that's why these affirmations are very important. Especially the gratitude, the appreciation that I have a holy name, I have this opportunity. And so then I can focus on, okay, this is my time. Otherwise I tend to be like the number and off 2 hours later and really, do I have to do this? It's almost like it's getting in the way of these other things that seem important. Anything else? The success principles of the good... Of the principles of the successful japa chanter?
Follow the regular principles.
Follow the regular principles.
And only eat prasadam.
What?
Only eat prasadam.
Only eat prasadam. Very good.
Humility.
Humility.
Turn out of
humility. And Badahari, can you tell us what humility means?
No.
Theoretically, at least?
I have no idea. Well, to feel oneself helpless, really, that we can't do it without Krishna, we have no personal ability. Srila Prabhupada was sometimes ferocious in his humility, so it doesn't necessarily, because he felt himself a servant of Krishna, so he did things that might not have appeared humble to other people, but one time he said, I don't know anything about science, but I go and I challenge the scientists. So is it because I know Krishna will give me the intelligence? But he didn't say it exactly like that, but that was the idea.
Yeah.
So I think it's the dependence and feeling oneself as a servant of Krishna and utterly dependent on Krishna to do anything.
There's also this verse, I don't know if I mentioned this verse, that the holy name has unlimited power. Did I mention that verse? The holy name has unlimited power to deliver any living entity. Did I mention that last week?
That's a nice verse.
I guess I didn't. So that we can have faith that the holy name can purify us, at the same time we can be humble. We're not proud of ourselves, but we understand the power of the holy name. And I would say there's a kind of hyper-humility in which we think, oh, I'm so fallen, and that becomes an excuse for remaining fallen. And then we could commit the offense of to think the glories of the Lord are imagination, that it works on some people, but it doesn't work on me. I'm too fallen. So we see a lot of that. I'm too fallen, etc., etc. But I would say that can border on the offense of considering the glories of the Lord imagination. That can't really work on me, I'm too fallen. So that way, so-called humility can work against us, where real humility is, okay, I'm fallen, but the holy name is not fallen, and it can uplift me. Sukada?
I was going to mention something that helps me with the time aspect, you know, when I don't have time, you know, how am I going to, I just think, well, a feature of Krishna is his name is Kala, which is time. So that if we do that, then Krishna can amazingly stretch time, you know, so that we have time to, I found to do this and do that, so that's just one thing that's helped me.
A devotee told me that recently. She said, "I'm not chanting my rounds." And she said, "Anymore." And I said, "Is it time?" She said, "No. When I chant my rounds, I have more time. When I don't chant, I waste time." Yes.
One thing which I really found, like you're saying about the success principle, one thing which I really found is that after attending these sessions, I really feel hopeful that there's, like, actually see a goal, and actually it's like becoming so clear that there is a goal, and that Asha Bandha is there, and very enlightening to get up every morning and just want to chant. And time, I was just, as you were saying about time, I found that now I'm almost like 10 minutes to around, and it's so much more time to chant. But it's so much more, of course, the time is available, like somehow it's available, but it's like 10 minutes almost. Because it was sometimes, I know in the morning I have limited amount of time, and it's, I chanted four rounds, it's been almost 40, 45 minutes. So, but it's so, it was, because ever since we started doing, like, you know, the japa, the mantra is big, it's sitting in front of the Mahamantra, it's so wonderful. And what I found was the prayers which you had given, you know, with each name. The two which really capture me is the one which capture my heart, or Radha, please capture my heart. But last week, what I was chanting, I was saying about chanting, "Oh Krishna, please pull my heart to you." As I was chanting in front of the Guru Parampara, and I found that I was chanting to each one, and I was saying, "Krishna, Krishna," and I was feeling I'm climbing the steps, and I'm like, running out of breath, but I'm climbing the steps and saying, "Krishna, Krishna," and somewhere I would say, "Please pull my heart to you." It was so intense that by the time I got to Krishna's picture, it was like, you know, wow, I have reached to Krishna. It was very sweet. So those prayers have been like a lifeline. They've been very, 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 very beneficial in my japa.
Nice.
The thing which you said about try to pretend you're deaf and dumb. So the very next morning I said, "Oh, I should be quiet and let me chant." So I was chanting and actually chanted a whole round. And it really focused me. I was actually able to take everything out of my mind, and I was actually able to focus because I couldn't hear. And so I was trying to hear without hearing. And it was really sweet. So every day, if I remember, I'll do. Some days I start with quiet japa. Some days, if my mind is wandering, I stop and chant quietly. And that helps a lot.
Very nice. Thank you.
Just on that point, that one thing I understood from the japa retreats, and I think a lot of people appreciated, that sometimes we chant really loudly, and it actually, you hear less the louder you chant. But or chanting softly, or just chanting from your heart and not even audibly, but bringing the focus in was really, you know, really effective in bringing the attention. I just want to amplify that. It's a really...
Actually, when I start chanting loudly, I suddenly remember what you said about affection. See, if I'm saying too loud, I'm not expressing affection. You know? Like, even to my child, I'm speaking too loud, they think I'm upset with them. So my mind always comes back to the word affection. Chant with affection. So I'm speaking to Krishna, I have to be with affection. So I just, and I chant very softly now. I find myself chanting very softly and with more intent.
What do you think would be one of the keys for a successful japa chanter?
To think of Krishna while you're chanting japa.
In what way?
Like his pastimes.
Do you do that when you chant?
And it helps me a lot.
Which pastimes do you think of?
Different pastimes.
Nice. That's the fourth stage. Nama Rupa Guna Lila. You're already on the fourth stage. What about, what kind of effort do you put into your chanting?
Well, when I chant, when I think of Krishna, I listen to the Maha Mantra to nourish the name and listen to it because it's such a special mantra that if I don't listen to the mantra that I won't nourish it. I'll just be chanting so quiet that I can't hear it. So I chant so I can hear the name and nourish the sound.
Very nice. And then what happens when you do that?
I go into another world.
What world is that?
Krishna's world.
Oh, very nice. So we all have to look forward to that day when we also can enter that world. So anything else? Okay, so, yes?
Just about humility. I don't think there's any question of being humble with Krishna unless we're humble with devotees. And I find that the very best practical tool for practicing humility is the third verse of the Shikshastakam itself, the recitation of this verse. And I use it often, you know, in my dealings, if I'm about to, you know, react to someone in a certain way, I just go through this verse, you know, once you chant the holy name of the Lord in a humble state of mind, think of oneself lower than the straw in the street, once you be more tolerant than the tree, devoid of all sense of false prestige, and ready to offer all respect to others. You know, and about 99.9% of the time, it modifies what I was going to do.
We were also talking that the last retreat, you were asking Girashami about how the humility develops. Wasn't that the question? What did he say?
He spoke for a while, but I have to. What was the exact thing? The consistent attempt to chant with attention will bring humility. And Virjan, he also explained that. So it's kind of a catch-22, you know, you have to chant with humility, but I don't have humility, so how do I? But that attempt to, you know, consistent attempt to hear, to be present with the holy name will result in. So that's the hope. I believe it's true.
Yeah, well, and then it's also said humility means reality. The realities were small. So by chanting and being purified, we realize that more and more. And Srila Prabhupada once wrote me, and I asked him about the importance of thinking of Krishna and how I could always think of Krishna. He said, always depend on Krishna, and then you'll always think of him. And the way he said to depend, he said, think you're not qualified. I was temple president. He said, think you're not qualified to run the temple. And think that unless Krishna helps you, everyone will leave. So dependency, the prerequisite for dependency is not feeling qualified. Even if you're so-called qualified, Krishna is obviously more qualified. So I always found that very helpful. Particularly when I know I'm not qualified to do something, I remember that letter and I pray to Krishna. And oftentimes I see qualifications coming, ideas coming that are a little bit against my natural way of thinking, and I can see that Krishna is making up for the lack of qualification. And I think, you know, in our work in becoming Krishna conscious and helping others become Krishna conscious, if we're in that mood.
Sorry.
If we're in that mood, We can become very empowered both in our sadhana and our service. You know that lecture in Los Angeles, Prabhupada said, the movement will spread and you can stay and get the credit. So it's like, okay, it's going to spread and Lord Chaitanya has to use people. So who's he going to use? And we've seen he hasn't used the people very long who think they're qualified. So now I wanted to spend the next hour in discussing together where we go from here, which includes how to take what we've learned and how to be successful in applying that, and also where as a group or in this community we want to go in the future. So first I wanted to relate some experiences that I have in talking to devotees who've come to the Japa retreats and programs, and it's quite interesting and telling. So please pay attention because this is really important. Recently I was in Los Angeles and I invited a devotee to come to the Japa retreat, and I had last year been in Los Angeles and I did two programs for an hour and a half in the evening, and he attended both those programs. So when I invited him to the retreat, he said, you know, I don't think I need to go because I got so much from those two programs, from that 3 hours a year ago. He said he got so much. He said, I've been applying what you taught in those programs, so I can't see why I would need to go to retreat because it's benefiting me so much. And then we have experience with people who've gone to Japa retreats who said, I got so much out of the retreat, it was transforming, and it lasted for a few months, and then gradually kind of faded out. And then recently I was in Orlando, and Tariq Ramaswamy was telling me the things that he got from the retreat that he's doing. So again, the things that stuck with him, that he went to the retreats, I think in April, and I was just there a few weeks ago, and he said, yeah, I'm doing this and that and this and that, and this really helps me. And he's very conscientious of what he's doing. So I'm seeing that people who are serious in Krishna consciousness or extremely serious, a lot of things stick, and they just remain. They just continue. And then people who are a little weaker, it remains for a while, they have more of a difficult time maintaining it. So I wanted to talk a little bit about how to deal with that, because it's obviously a big problem. And we've learned so much, and we've been 6 weeks here, and every week you know you're coming back, so it kind of keeps your focus. And so it's going to be a little different if we don't continue this or you don't do something to continue. So in thinking about that, I began to understand the obvious that, as we said, pure devotee, pure japa. Fallen devotee tends to be fallen japa or somewhere. So there's obviously a connection to the level of our bhakti and the quality of our chanting. And what also seems to be obvious is there's a connection to our chanting and the way people are living their lives. And it also seems to be obvious that there's a connection to their japa and their intensity, or their desire, or their need for spiritual advancement. So there seems to be something. So at the last retreat, a lady made a statement after she learned some things that she said really helped her. And it was going to, she felt it was going to transform her japa. And then she made the statement, I hope when I go home, I can do this. And I said, when she said, I hope, then in my mind I said, uh-oh, it's not going to happen. Because when you say, I hope, really what you're saying is what?
It's
yeah, it's kind of like I'm rolling the dice. So then immediately something came to mind and I said, don't hope, plan how you're going to do it. Because I think planning is antithetical to hope. At one of the japa retreats we did, when we have the weekend ones, we start Friday night, and on Friday night we have a little introductory program. And the last thing we do is we ask the devotees to make the effort to chant the best rounds they've ever chanted in their life. And then how we do that is they get out their notebooks and they plan. They write out how they're going to do it. They make a plan. You remember that? We did that? In the last room. So, okay, I will go to bed this time. I'll get up this time. I'll chant in this room. I'll say these prayers. Whatever it is they're going to do. And this one lady who's a lawyer, she was almost in a state of shock. And she said, you know, I'm a meticulous planner. I plan everything out that I do. I plan my day out. I plan my work out meticulously. And she said, you know, I never made a plan to chant good japa. And she said, that's very strange for such a meticulous planner not to plan to do that. So one of the things that I found in making plans is it kind of keeps you on track, even if you tend to go off track, because you remember your plan when you start to go off track. Like maybe you get up in the morning and think, well, I'll do A, B, and C, and D before I chant. But then you remember your plan is, as soon as you get up, you're going to chant. So it kind of enables you to deal with the conditioning or the tendencies. I read this book by Dr. Laura, and you've all heard of Dr. Laura, right? I don't know what the book was. But anyway, in the book, she was talking about acting impetuously, basically losing control. And she said, what's really good to do is when you're not in that situation, write down what you're going to do when you get in that situation. So when you're about to do it, you can go to your list and look. Call a friend. Go on a walk. You know, something to interrupt the pattern. So I think that's the advantage of a plan. It's like, okay, by habit I want to do A, B, and C, but my plan is to do D, E, and F. And so the plan is there. And I also think plans bring intention. And they also counteract the tendency of, well, I don't know what's going to happen. We're just going to see. That's such a bad way to live. To just like leave it up to circumstance, leave it up to the, you know, the modes of nature. Well, we'll see which way the modes are blowing tomorrow. You know. And so we can understand in the 64 principles of the successful japa chanter, they plan for good japa. They don't go with the flow. They don't do vinyasa flow japa. They don't go with the flow. They create the flow where they want it to go. They don't go. And so that's important, because I think that's a big thing that we face. And we had discussed in the beginning habit. And I just want to relate my personal experience, and I'd like Bada Hari to relate his. But this is my personal experience. In doing this kind of work, basically what we're doing in all our japa programs is we're dealing with people's japa blueprint. You know, and we talked about this a little bit. What's your blueprint? What is normal for you? And we're basically trying to upgrade what normal is. So excellent becomes normal. As I said, when they come in on Friday night, I tell them, this morning your rounds were probably like they were Thursday, and if we don't interrupt your blueprint, your rounds tomorrow would probably be like they were today. But we're here to interrupt your blueprint and upgrade it to business class, to a higher class of japa. So my experience, and it's very, very scary, and it also correlates with what I read in the Jiva Dharma. And it's simply this. When my japa is good and I'm conscientious, it tends to stay good. But it only takes one bad day to totally throw it off. And I think we have that experience with any habit. I know I was conscientiously taking medicine, Chinese medicine I was given. I went for like 6 months, and I never missed it. Like, you know, six pills at each meal. And then I went traveling, I didn't take it, or it was just, I was so busy, and I stopped. And it's been like 3 weeks since I came back, and I've only taken it once. So I lost, as I see, I just lost the habit. It was just like I was doing it, and then I lost it. And I see the same thing often happens with japa. And the problem is, it's much easier to maintain the momentum when it's up here, but when it gets down here, it takes a lot more to get it back up there, and I'm already going down. So it's although it takes more to go up, it even takes more because I'm on a downhill slope. So I feel that's really a dangerous thing. And what the Jiva Dharma, how I say it correlated with that, what the Jiva Dharma said is that one of the problems of not chanting well is that basically you kind of have to undo the bad you're doing. I mean, of course, it says when you don't chant well or you commit offenses, the cure is to keep chanting. But the point it makes is, if you commit a sin, it says if you chant the holy name, you'll be relieved. It says, if you commit a sin, chant the holy name, and you'll be relieved. But it says, if you commit aparad, you have to continually chant to be relieved. And then it goes on to say something depressing, which I didn't tell you last week. Are you ready for it?
No.
What the heck?
It basically says that nam-aparad is the greatest offense, even greater than sinful activity. And that's why it takes constant chanting to overcome nam-aparad. So I see that when I heard that, then I started thinking, sometimes when I'm not chanting well, I'm thinking, well, is this chanting actually hurting me more because it's setting in motion a bad pattern of chanting? And I think it's true. Of course, it says you should keep chanting. It's not that I shouldn't chant. But I started to see how good japa tends to continue, and then when I slip, then the bad japa tends to create a pattern which tends to repeat itself. And then the blueprint kind of goes down. I'm sure you've all experienced it. Just as the blueprint can go up, it can go down. And then it tends to, once it goes down, then it tends to seek its own level and stays on the level. It could go down a little more, it could go up a little more. But I think from these programs, we've got it up a little. So now we're discussing how to keep it. And I just wanted to throw that out from my personal experience, how if you're keeping steady, I think we should be a little bit afraid or a little bit more cautious than we might normally be about bad chanting and thinking, well, I just had a bad japa day, it's okay. My experience is it's not really okay because it sets the pattern on a downward spiral and it always takes a little more the next day because you've lost a little momentum. And it's easy to lose the momentum, and then what happens when the momentum becomes slack into a certain degree, then we get back into the courtesy and the six, just trying to get the number and losing the taste and so forth. You want to say something?
Say that last point again, that he said that Bhaktivinoda Thakur said that nama parada is the greatest.
Yeah.
What?
We had, after I said that in Dallas, it took 20 minutes to undo that, to like elaborate on it, because we're like, people will think, well, I shouldn't chant because I'm not chanting well. But he said, of course, the antidote is constant chanting. But his point was, that's a big antidote compared to committing a sin. You just chant the holy name and the reaction is removed. But committing aparad, nam-aparad, you have to constantly chant. So it made me think, even if I'm not committing big nam-aparad or I'm on the lower stages of nam-abhas, it still seems that I have to be undoing my bad chanting. Is like I have to kind of undo my bad chanting to get back to, in a sense. But I was just thinking maybe you could speak from your experience.
I'd say it points out the necessity of the japa retreat to really take our japa seriously and want to chant without offense.
Yeah.
It's, in other words, as I was thinking about that example where Prabhupada said that he was talking about some devotees, oh, they're chanting, and Prabhupada said with that chanting it'll take them millions of births or something like that.
300, yeah.
So the necessity of becoming conscious chanters and conscious of what our goal is, yeah, it makes it all more paramount.
Not to negate, I mean, what you're saying. I also remember Prabhupada saying that, someone asked Prabhupada, well, how do I know I'll remember Krishna, you know, at the time of death? And Prabhupada said, if you chant 16 rounds and follow the four written principles, Krishna will force himself into your mind at the time of death. So of course you want to always improve it. But still, sometimes it does sound so like kind of scary, you know, almost discouraging that,
yeah.
Well, if we can't come up, then we just give up entirely. But
yeah.
I think part of it is that when you stick to the process, that you do improve, and that Krishna does send the ways to improve, just like these chapa retreats.
Yeah, I think that also the commitment is a important thing. Prabhupada stressed that a lot, making the commitment to doing that, and that Krishna would help you because you're doing that. I feel like. Even though I've chanted offensive rounds for so many years, at least it gave me the chance to come to a japa retreat and maybe improve. So, and I was thinking that also that Prabhupada had great faith in the holy name, and just that if someone would start chanting, I mean, so many times he would say, just chant Hare Krishna, you know. He didn't necessarily elaborate how, but just, you know,
they're starting that one guy who starts chanting. I forget the story, but Mara and turns into Ramana.
Yeah, that was Valmiki.
I mean, how bad chanting was that?
Yeah.
Well, it's exceptions, I guess, but
yeah.
Still interesting.
The more you know about how to chant properly, the more you're expected to chant properly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But it's true that in one hand, chanting is a self-correcting process. If you stick to it, if you make a commitment to stick to it, then at a certain point, I think a person will want to chant better. It's not.
Not to disagree with what you said,
mm-hmm.
but I will a little bit.
That's
what I said. Of course, when Prabhupada said that, I always think. You know, he means, okay, if you chant 16 rounds properly throughout your life, you know, or at least with the effort. You know,
yeah.
With the effort. But the reason this part of the Jiva Dharma stood out in my mind was just because I'm so aware of how many devotees have stopped chanting. And so you don't stop chanting in one day. It's a process. You're chanting 16 rounds for many, many years, and then at some point it either gets to 12, you know, a few missed days, to 12, to 8, to 4, you know. So that is a reality. And it has to be connected to. I mean, the Jiva Dharma says namaparad. By namaparad you lose taste. And then, as Prabhupada said, how long can you go on without taste? So I'm only relating this as an experience because as a facilitator I've had to make a greater effort to chant well than I've ever made in my life, and I notice the difference. I can distinctly feel, you know, old habits starting to come in, and then the apathy setting in and easing into a lower standard, and the results of that lower standard and how it's affecting me in my life. And there's a definite difference. And then how it affects me in my life is my life then becomes more apathetic, then that affects my japa, and then it's like this downward spiral. One is affecting the other, as they do when you're going up. I've seen both sides, so that's just my concern. Hare Nam Chintami.
You were talking about support. What does support look like after we leave this japa retreat? And I was thinking about. You know, with Bhakti Tirtha Swami, one of the something that he developed within his community was a mood of devotees going deeper with each other on a regular basis, way beyond the hi, how are you, fine, how are you. You know, like being open to hearing from one another, learning how to create deeper loving relationships so that there could be honest exchanges. And not that, because we were having this discussion, I think, at one of the sessions a couple weeks ago, you know, like this is something we're bringing out of the closet. We're talking about our japa. So I'm just wondering if that's something that we might agree to as a group. It's very touchy. You know, like for someone to come up to somebody and say, I think you might be missing a name, excuse me. You know, but what if we all were able to with one another because we committed to come for the 6 weeks and trying to be better? Is there a way that we could feel that connection enough with one another, or say to one another, you know, I'm open for deeper connections or talking about what's going on? Because as we're chanting, what happens is things come up. So how do we address, you know, we're talking about becoming more purified. One of the challenges is when we start to realize that when we start to chant our japa, it's hard work. It isn't just mouthing some sounds and putting in the numbers. It's hard work to face the Lord, because we're fighting with our false ego every single morning, aren't we? I mean, we're doing battle every morning. We are spiritual warriors and we're doing battle. And it isn't easy. You know, the moment, you know, I feel like very much like the Bhagavatam of the story of Dhruva Maharaj, when he was fighting the yakshas and they had ability at mystical illusions and they were throwing things at him. And he was grown up, he'd already seen the Lord, but he became so bewildered that demigods came in, remember? And they reminded him of the sacred mantra that he had been given. You know, and the power of those illusions that took his mind away. You know, I really feel that in the morning. You know, I make all these wonderful intentions. You've had this feeling? I feel like the kindred spirit over here. And I'm chanting all these prayers and I'm preparing and da-da-da-da-da, and all of a sudden I just feel like this onslaught. You know, it's like everything coming against. And we're declaring war against the material energy. There's nothing more powerful, I think, than any of us can do than the pure chanting of the holy name. I don't think we realize what comes up against us on the subtle platform to keep us distracted and to keep us from chanting, because we'll become very potent as devotees. And we'll be able, Prabhupada said, we could take this world over in 18 days. Mm-hmm. And this Bhagavad Gita says, for one who controls the mind, the super soul is already reached. Now, can you imagine having an army that you don't have to have CB radios? Everybody's just getting it. Like, as soon as the leader just says, everybody's got, they just know what their part is. They're happy to do their share, whatever it is. I mean, that's just incredible. Prabhupada said that they would kill us if they knew what we were doing. And it's very powerful. So I probably said an awful lot in a period of time.
Can I make a comment? Can I make a comment and ask a question?
Yeah.
I was thinking, I'm writing an article, I'm writing a mini japa course, you know, like you get an email, you know, a little, like a page or two every week. And I began thinking when I was writing, I wrote this, I said, imagine if you were Maya, and your job is to keep conditioned souls in Maya, and now you're working on the devotees. So generally to keep them in Maya, you dangle the carrots and they run after them, and then you realize, if I dangle those carrots in front of the devotees, they're not going to run after them if they're chanting their japa well. So if you were Maya and you were working with the devotees, where would the best place to work be? Get them on their japa, and then you dangle the carrots and they'll just go after them. So, as you say, that's, you know, that's the pressure point. That's where she's working. My question was, how, you had some idea of It's just like a
well, cultivating a mood with one another of openness and just genuineness, it helps with humility as well.
Yeah.
Not posturing. We're all here saying, "Gosh, I need some support." It's a support group. Like any 12-step program. It's a support group. It's a support group. We're saying, I'm not there. I'm happy to have the support. I'm open to, I can call somebody up and say, "Whoa, I've had a bad job a week," or "I'm having trouble with this or that," or, that we care, care and love each other enough to be there for one another, and that we're open to that love, that we see it as love, not as criticism, because we're working on humility and we're working on, to cultivate those deeper relationships with each other, with Krishna, the Holy Name.
In the old days, we used to call that preaching to each other.
Used to call that what?
Preaching to each other.
Preaching
to each other.
Oh, preaching to each other.
It wasn't like we just went out and distributed books and preached. We were all constantly in that state, in that frame of mind. So if you were having a hard day, I would just say, "Well, you can't do that because it's that man." And you would just go, "Yeah, okay."
That's a nice point. You kind of get a grip and go, it was just expected, it wasn't?
Because
we were
in
the ashram.
Yeah.
I mean, that's love, isn't it? That's real love.
Yeah, but sometimes that's also a different situation when two people are in the fire and they start to gradually slip away. You can pull them back easier than if somebody's way gone and then you preach to them. They're going to be like, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's different. I remember those days, they were just, "Come on, Prabhu, wake up earlier, come on." It's like, it was a little different thing.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, if I had someone tell me that, I'm like,
"You get sued."
No, you just turn your back and go the other way and just say, "All right, this devotee's trying to have a meow," or whatever, But, I would definitely agree with Harinath, what you're saying about doing like a support group after, because I feel personally that, even after all the little tips and techniques and things we learned here, it's still, for me, I think it needs to go a little deeper than just, sit like this and everything will be okay.
One of the...
Nobody said that.
No, I'm just saying that,
right, yeah.
There's a lot of things here that, were, very helpful and went a little bit deeper, but for me, I think I'm more fallen than all of you, but no. I would just say this, I just don't have the desire, I chant, but like you were saying, it kind of scared me when you were like, you said that it starts going less and less and falling more and more away until one day they just don't chant anymore. So I'm like, I don't want to be that devotee. So I think it has to go a little bit deeper than...
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that we experience at the Japa retreats, or many people experience once they do it, it's not so much what we're learning, but it's what happens while we're chanting that's transforming.
Mm-hmm.
Because we get a lot of time to chant there. On level two, we had 264 round days, and we're doing a lot of chanting on the other days. And first you chant all your rounds in the temple with everybody else, and then extra chanting. So really the transformation, the realizations are taking place during japa. So I think, number one, it's important for us, as far as possible, to chant the best rounds we possibly can every day, because that keeps this energy going and the realization going and the inspiration. And when we start slipping, and that's dangerous ground. I mean, sometimes we can't help it, but just from what I'm seeing happening at the japa retreat, it's that really good japa that's really... But I was just listening to some testimonials. We're putting them on our website, and they sent me testimonials to look at. But basically, the testimonials people are giving are things like, "Don't even think about it. Just come. It's the best thing you could ever do. You can't imagine what it's like. It's just a totally transformational experience. I'll never be the same again." Then the next person comes up, says the exact same thing, and the next person comes up. And you look at that and you think, how could they say that? All I did was go to a japa retreat. It says, transformational, changed my life. I've been chanting for 58 years, you know. This is the best thing I've ever done. You know, it's like one after the other after the other. So what's happening is they're getting some taste that they didn't get, that they've never gotten some experience. So that it's so important to have that on a regular basis. And then we're finding that some devotees just, the retreats are, it's like kind of what you're all saying, they're just where they go when they need that booster shot. It's just, it's kind of, we didn't know that when we created it, but we saw that as a byproduct, that it's just, it's kind of like going to India, you need it periodically. It's like, there's a retreat, and they're just periodically, you just go. And it, you know, wherever you are, you get knocked up, usually higher than where you were at the last retreat. And then, so, you know, you might come down a little bit, but you will come as low, and you'll have more. So, in lieu of that experience, if you can in some way increase your intention and desire to improve your japa on a daily basis and knock it up a little bit, it'll give you more momentum. So that your lowest point will be much, will be all, you want your lowest point to be safe. You don't want your lowest point to be like, I don't want to do this.
Because I was kind of expecting, like when I first came in, we had the numbers of where we're at. I was thinking, well, 6 weeks, I'll probably be over there. And then I'm getting towards the end. I didn't really apply it. I didn't really have the desire to.
Yeah.
I'm still in the habits, in my day-to-day habits, and I just, it's scary how awakening is like, wow, I'm really just not there. And I'm trying to think, all right, what do I do now? How do I build a taste again for devotional service? Like I was talking about Bodhihari before, kind of about, you know, where I'm at now and where I used to be. And, you know, I just think about where I used to be and where I'm at now.
Used to be in a good sense or a bad sense?
Used to be, well, it used to be,
yeah.
Used to be a very good sense. It was nice. You know? Now it's not doing that.
I would say that, I mean, also, sometimes it's very hard to chant at home. It's like going to Mangalarti, even though it takes some time. I know that chanting in the temple with the devotees, it's very powerful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like seeing the deities first thing in the morning,
yeah,
and being there, praying to them. Like, you know, yeah, it really makes it, sets us a lot of help right there that's available.
Tulsi's,
you know,
there.
Yeah, and Tulsi Devi, right.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
and Prabhupada set that up for us, you know what I mean, to
yeah.
help. So it does really help. It's like I notice when I get up and I go to Mangalarti, then I start chanting, the rounds, they just flow better because you just, you know what I mean, you're just ready for
yeah.
it. I mean, this has also helped. I mean, I want to thank both of you. It really helped me
yeah.
so much, but I know that that's also a big component.
Well,
one
more practical thing, maybe we can together once so we can go to Mangalarti.
Maybe.
Pick a day and we all can meet up in Mangalarti and chant.
No, she's
nice.
Proposing it as a group japa support activity.
You're saying a support
group.
Do something about it. And the other point about
well, another, just before I forget, there was also a suggestion of somebody's home, like once a week from 5 to 7. At someone's home, we have Tulsi, and then we all come and chant there together. Because when you learn these techniques and you chant together with the same people, it's a very, very powerful. So I personally like that idea.
It's also
need
evening time, too, so you can't say, well, I didn't wake up from Mangalarti, but you know, it's in the evening. It's not like
oh,
I didn't wake up for 6:30.
You're saying
in the morning.
Oh, in the morning.
5 in the morning.
See, my old, I don't know this is if anyone's in the same boat, but I'm working just a lot right now to get out of debt. And I'm like, tomorrow I'm going to be at work. I'm going to leave the house at 7:30. And I'm going to, because I got a big project and I've got this goal to get it done. And at the same time, I've been some crazy hours, so. And all I do is I work and I just chant my japa and airbrush something, but it's not, I'm not giving enough energy for this japa right now. And but it's just, you know, the desire's not there to balance it.
I think I'll answer your question. Hari Priya, you wanted to finish?
Also, once one devotee told me that it's always harder to do something the first time. Like, if you want to, I remember when I was having a hard time 14, 15 years ago, it was so hard to chant, and I stopped chanting. I just couldn't do it all. I was practically going crazy, and I stopped chanting. And then the next day was easier. Nothing happened when I stopped chanting.
Right.
Hey, I didn't get any reaction, so then it was easier for me to. So then I approached this devotee, and I talked to him about it. He was like a spiritual mentor to me. And he goes, you know, it's always easier, harder the first time to do something.
Mm.
So then you realize you don't have any reaction. It was easy. Hey, I don't have to do it anymore. Mm. Mm-hmm.
Easy to stop, hard to...
No, the first time it was hard.
Mm-hmm.
But then after that it got easier.
What's that idea, you know? You start riding a bike, it's hard, and then you get the momentum, then it's easy. Yes?
One thing I've felt, and I think this, I mean, this is just some kind of psychological, and that whatever you focus on grows. You know, I mean, you see that. You focus on bad things. Well, I don't know, they're all in our head. Focus on job. Well, one thing that's helped me is there's a book called Harinam Chintamani by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And that is such a nice book. And all it's still is this conversation between Haridasa Thakur and Lord Chaitanya. And Lord Chaitanya is asking Haridasa Thakur, tell me about the holy name. Well, okay. You can imagine. Sparks. And but that's, it's such a nice book, and I've even got it on tape, so when I'm in the studio, I turn that on. And so I'm hearing that too. But just to have, so that the holy name's with you all day, and you know, it's sort of a different paradigm or a different, you know, subject matter, but it's still the holy name, you're still thinking about. And so when I finish in the studio, I'm thinking, man, where's my D-bag? I want to chant because I just heard this place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I
yeah, yeah.
I want to go there.
Mm-hmm. That's a really good point. Hearing about the holy name.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, my realization about what you're saying is I think we're all in the same situation to one degree or another. And my realization, a lot of times I think, okay, at the end of my life I'm going to look back and think, why did I do all these things that got in the way of my chanting?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And it's like, whatever I have to do, I got to get it done between 9 and 5 or 9 and 6. If I extend further, it starts interfering with my life, with my sadhana, my spiritual life. So it's just a question of what's important in creating a formula. And a lot of times when we fall in these situations, we have to look at ourselves and say, not like these situations have come to me, but how did I create the situation? Right? Because ultimately we created it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when we want to improve our japa, you can't not look at the rest of your life. It's impossible. You have to look at it. And then as I got more into my japa, I started looking at so many things I was doing and then saying, wait a minute, I can't continue to do that anymore. Because that's having a negative effect on my chanting. I have to eliminate this, eliminate that, do this, not do that. And I think it's just part of the reality. And if we don't do that, then we get back into this program where we sit down to chant our japa that morning, and it's so hard because of what has gone on the day before, day before, day before. The lack of reading, the lack of regularity. You know, all these things work with desire. So it's not necessary that any of us have inherently this intense desire. But if we live our life in a particular way, it feeds the proper desire. And we live our life in another way, it undermines the desire. So particularly if the desire is weak, it's just good if you can do things which would increase it. Like what Adidev's saying, it's so powerful. If you read about the glories of the holy name, it's like he says, you want to chant. And you start to appreciate, oh, I have this opportunity to chant.
Well, that's actually been the best gift I've ever had, is the iPod. Remember when I told you, I get my iPod, I can listen to Prabhupada and Kirtan. Well, I'm at work all day long. And that's been like my only real sadhana is just hearing through the iPod while I'm painting or something.
Yes.
heard a really beautiful story yesterday. I'm sure I won't be able to do it justice, but basically there's a devotee, and he was married and had, I think, 4 or 5 children, and he was working very hard all day long, and found it very difficult to chant, and especially during the season, he was some type of construction worker. And so when it would get busy, he would just stop chanting, and then sometimes he would stop following principles and so many things, and he would just work. And he had a wife who was, you know, like wanted to be a Vedic wife, and she had all these ways of being that were a little artificial and whatnot. But in the end, what happened was, and then when he could, he would immediately pick up his beat bag if he wasn't working, and then he would just chant like he had never stopped, which is pretty extraordinary, as you've been pointing out. Somehow this man was able to do that. And a number of things happened, and his wife, all suddenly, or not suddenly, obviously, but became a very strong Christian. And all the kids were out, and then she brought them all to the church, and they were all eating meat. And this man had made a vow. There was one thing he was going to do. He couldn't always follow the principles, he couldn't always chant a japa, but he made the vow that he would never offend a Vaishnava, never, including his wife, who had taken his children and done all these things, and, you know, all this. And he just sat, and he just had a little room in the back of the house. And in the end, he died quite young. He got cancer, and he died. And he had his, when they found him, he died alone. And they found his japa beads in his hand tight, clenched. They had to. But, you know, get it like this, and while their body was still in the house, his wife and all the church members had come and immediately got all the books out, all the prophet's books, everything that he had in his room, that the only place that he could have anything in the house, and they burnt it out in the yard. And then his son said, "You see, Satan has taken him." And Satan has taken him because they believe that, you know, he was captured by Satan because he was chanting Hare Krishna. So, you know, we have really no idea where the holy name will take anybody. I was reading in our chanting this morning how we know it, but it's just the holy name is as powerful as Krishna. When we think of Krishna, he's all powerful, and just those little words are as powerful. Extraordinary. So, yeah. We may not be able to do it all right, but Krishna is very appreciative of the effort, and the more effort, obviously, the more blessed, the more wonderful our lives become, and the more wonderful, you know, Krishna reciprocates. So it's all. Kind of encompassing, isn't it?
Thank you. I think that's also a really important point to emphasize, is the effort.
Yeah.
Because any study of offensive chanting versus offenseless, always the demarcation line is effort. Not how well you're doing, but how much you're trying. Mm. Not necessarily the result, but the effort you're putting into it.
Giriraj Maharaj told that story of his initiation letter from Prabhupada. Do you remember that?
Where he lost his beads, or
no? He was thinking. He was thinking that. What was?
I don't know if it was the one I know.
Well,
was an initiation.
It was a letter, but anyway, Prabhupada said, "Try your best."
Yeah.
Yeah. He didn't say chant offenselessly. He said, "Try your best to chant." So, I mean, it just underscores your point of the effort. Because
anything you'll read on the clearing stage is all the effort to not commit offense. And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta said, if you're not making the effort to not commit offense, that's offensive. That's the definition of offensive chanting. So if we just can have enough energy, strength, determination, give enough priority to our chanting that we make the effort not to commit offense, I think gradually we will be successful. We're on the right path. Yes?
Well, it sounds like one of the things that we could do is we could have japa buddies. If anybody, you know, wanted that, we could ask in the group. And also when you were talking about the holy name, that's the culture that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had with his devotees, is that they shared Krishna Katha continuously. We were immersed. And so we could also make it a point to share with one another something we've read about the holy name insights that we're getting, because many things that you're saying are very hopeful, very encouraging. The more we hear those, you know, all of us need to feel hopeful. Mm. We need to feel encouraged and to encourage one another. And so that would be something that we could all do as well, is to continually read and share, just make it a point to share with somebody some special insight.
Yeah, it also would be nice to meet, you know, in a month or two and check in. See what's working, what's not. Yes?
Some of us, after one of Bhagavatam classes a while ago, and it might have been part of it, talking about the retreats and not being able to go early, but for whatever reason wanting to go, that it might be nice, like, at some point to have, like, a community japa day, you know, at the temple.
Yeah.
With a specific intention,
wow,
but to bring the community together and actually, you know, chant for whatever the purpose might be, like,
mm-hmm,
just to purify our community, or, you know what I mean? Develop
mm-hmm
love for Radha, whatever.
Well, in Hillsboro, they just found out that they've already had 2 64-round days
wow
at their temple. So they periodically have scheduled the Saturday. So I think that would be wonderful to schedule a Saturday and maybe even have a place where we go and take a Manavrata, or even, I don't know.
Maybe even before they want to make this a big marathon, or a proper marathon, maybe sometime before that would be good.
I think before you have a 64-round day, you could have a 16-round day.
that might be good for a certain Saturday, for sure.
I mean, and then everybody could probably come the whole day, you know?
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, another thought I had was, you know, the Bible camp, you know, they have lodging and they have a big room. You could actually do that for a weekend and, you know, Friday night we meet, and Saturday, you know, we have a little class prepare and we do 64 rounds, and Sunday we just share our experience and realization, you know.
You know, that's really doable for anybody who's had a little basis in the job retreat, because we had 70 people last year and we had 25 people. So that would definitely be something doable. That would be exciting.
Something simple, yeah. It's just because that's the one thing you miss in these programs and even the weekends is the chanting all day.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah,
so we...
64-round day in the sauna for all the construction workers. Take a day off.
Probably in that scenario, we'd want to have a class in the morning, maybe after every 2 hours have a little like half-hour session and just, you know, get everyone on board, do another 2 hours. And, 'cause that's basically how you do the 64. You do them in sets of 16. So you're not thinking 17, 18, 19, just back 1, 2, so you're still... Another set of 16.
Mm-hmm.
Second set, third set, fourth set.
That's how you do it in the retreats.
Yeah. That's how most people, yeah.
You come together? That's
no.
True.
No.
No,
they just say that.
We go through it, but we spend Wednesday night, Thursday, and Friday preparing.
I see.
So if we're not going to prepare, we won't prepare much on Friday. So I thought, you know, periodically you have a little break. Okay, this is just a meditation. And then we do the Manavrata and we're all in one place.
Right.
I would love to think we can have like japa workshops like a couple of times a year at least.
Yeah.
Maybe meeting with, like, you know, like somebody said about the 12-step program. Like, you know, they meet every week at the what do we call it? AA?
There's a group. There's a group in the community that meets on Tuesday nights. It's not an open group. I mean, not open, but it can only be so big. Yeah, they can't really take more people. But they get together at 6:30. They chant together for half an hour, and then they have japa katha for half an hour. Right now, they're reading Satchinandana Maharaj's book, and so they read that and discuss it. So they're here, like you were saying, or Harinam Chintami, they had to read and discuss a little bit. And then I think they have a little kirtan after that. So it's kind of there. And the devotees are really relishing that kind of association with each other. And weekly hearing the glories of the Holy
Name. Different house every week?
Yeah, the members of the group, rotate whose house it's at. And it's not too big, it's 20 people or so.
And I think they agreed no prasadam unless somebody feels like it.
Yeah, it's not
I think also it would be good if...
doesn't take any preparation on anybody's part. It's very, and it's not a huge amount of time, so it's, there's not much to object to,
Only once a week?
Once a week.
And an hour and a half, it's real simple.
This could give me this group.
Yeah, right here.
This group.
You like this group?
Including you too.
Yeah.
I'm Bridget.
It seems like it's best if we leave it to Harinam to take some of these ideas and then contact people and feel it out, see where we want to go. I think, particularly in this community, it's important because we don't live together, and I think that's a big obstacle in associating, so anything we can do to come together is helpful.
I would like for people could we just ask now if anyone would be interested in doing that and would want to be contacted? Oh, we've got, I do not have either.
I know Tuesday would work for me.
Is there a day that, without me having to call everyone individually, is there a day that right now we could agree on that this whole group is sitting here and would be open to a day at a time?
Sunday.
How many people could, who could not meet on a Wednesday?
On Tuesday.
Who could not meet on a Thursday? With the two people could not, three people could not meet on a Thursday.
Monday?
Monday.
You can't meet Monday.
Two persons can't meet Mondays.
Service
and Tuesdays is out, right? I think
person.
No.
So really, we don't have a day that not everyone can meet unless we choose a weekend day.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the reality.
Well, it could also be, a couple smaller groups. Could be a couple smaller groups.
Two smaller groups?
It's not bad. Small is beautiful. You can...
So the day that seemed there was two people couldn't meet on a Tuesday. So it was there. How many people can't meet on a Tuesday?
One
can.
I'm coming here, it gets so hectic.
So three really can't comfortably meet on a Tuesday.
For me, we only meet till April because I have my daughter
How many? Is there another day that all of you who can't meet Tuesday can meet? But if we do two different groups, we can do this. If we want to have, eight or nine people want to meet on a Wednesday, we've already got three here that a Wednesday is comfortable. If somebody else, it would be hard for me to organize both groups. If somebody wants to help out with the Wednesday group and you start with the core, like all three of you, if you want to meet on a Wednesday, and you're the core of this group, is there somebody else who would like to join?
Do you want to bring other people into the group?
Huh?
Do we want to bring more people?
First it would be good to have the two core groups and then contact the other people who aren't here tonight and see if they would like to come. There's about five or six. you know, and then make a decision, and then each core group can decide how big they would like their core group to be.
We have two groups that if we can go on it Wednesday, we can go on it Tuesday to another group.
Yeah, so say we
It's more, I think that's the important part, that it's a little more free flowing. I think it has to be to be ongoing.
Okay, so there's a small group that can happen on Wednesday, and then we can start a Tuesday. We have a Tuesday and a Wednesday, right? And just have two different groups. Is there everybody else is comfortable with
it? Yeah, if you miss one, you miss Tuesday and come to Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Praja has some words of inspiration. How would you like to inspire everyone? What can you say? Inspire them to chant better. What should they do?
Think of Krishna while you chant. And when you chant, listen to the name so you can really nourish the Maha Mantra. And
how should they pray?
They should pray to Krishna.
What should they pray?
That they can serve him forever.
Right. Beautiful. So, for everyone out in Krishna.com land, this is going to end our series of japa workshops. We've done probably, including this, almost 20. And we're going to begin a new series. I'm not sure when we're going to start, but we're going to do a new series on vows. And we're going to keep you informed. And we might do it live, and we might do it in the studio. But once you want to chant your 16 rounds, as I think you said, someone said, the four regular principles that also support us in vows and commitments in general. So we're going to, as Prabhupada said, the duty of the GBC is to make sure everyone's chanting their rounds and following the principles. So it's part of Bhagavad Life's program to help in both ways. So we're developing that, and we'll be doing some of that. And if you want to come to a japa retreat, January 28th through February 1st, is that it, in Los Angeles, in the desert outside of Los Angeles?
Oh, I'd love to.
You can see all the stars in the sky, the millions of stars. And
is
a lot
Joshua
of
Joshua Tree? It's called?
Joshua
what
Tree.
Is that a town or
it's near Palm Springs.
Out in the desert?
In the desert, yeah. About an hour and a half, 2 hours from the L.A. temple. So if you want to go there, tell them Mahatma sent you. Go to the website, japaretreat.com. You might. Tell them Mahatma said to give you the early bird discount. Badahari's going to be there. I'm going to be doing a Giriraj Maharaj should be there, Jagir Puruj. And Bhagavad Life, we're doing a yoga retreat in outside of Denver in January. So, because I'm going to that, I won't be able to go to the Joshua retreat. Yeah.
But when you said you're doing a japa newsletter, is it something which you could get?
Japa mini course, yeah. Harinam, do you have everyone's email address?
I do. I don't have a computer, but I do have everything.
So, when this mini
cutting
course,
edge.
I'm doing a mini japa course. Which
doesn't have. So
I will inform you when it's ready, and it'll summarize a lot of what we talked about. Some other things we haven't. Just to keep your reminder. It's basically written for people who haven't done our programs, but it's a good reminder.
Actually, after the japa workshop last in March, we were getting a japa support group. There was like the emails people were getting. You know, there was like a support group on Google.
Oh, that was from Tulsi Priya.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you
so
for
much
coming.
For your association.
Sri the Prabhupada ki jai.
Namo Bhagavate.